Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts. Soccer Matters.
Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid, gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Uribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A rare Friday show here. Had to change this one up just a little under the weather. And if you're doing a show, you got to have a voice. Did not have one on Tuesday, but we have one semi here on Friday. Show is always brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL-NOW. 713-CALL-NOW. They're bilingual. They'll pick up your case. They'll work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. Car, boat, motorcycle, refinery, drive an 18-wheeler, you get in an accident, unsettling time, you need the best. It's the Daspit Law Firm, presenting sponsor of Soccer Matters. All right, tomorrow it is the Texas Derby. Houston Dynamo traveling from Minnesota up to Frisco, Texas to take on FC Dallas. Dallas now has won two in a row. They sit number three in the Western Conference with a record of 6-3-3. The Dynamo at 4-5-2 right now. Joining us from the independent thirddegree.net, he's Buzz Carrick. Buzz, thank you for coming on.
Glenn, my friend, thanks for having me on.
All right, two in a row for FC Dallas. A quick 6 points. All of a sudden, you're third in the Western Conference, so things right now looking up for them.
Yeah, I think you have to be impressed with the way this team manages to grind out points, both at home and on the road. I think most people that follow this team closely would say that both the offense and the defense are not as good as last year, but they continue to get results. And that's probably in the end what matters the most, right?
You're only behind Seattle and LAFC. The Dynamo just played Seattle, a 1-0 loss in a game where they were down to nine men. All right, Nico Estevez, kind of give us a report card on him because there's a lot of good things said about him as a coach.
Yeah, he was brought in with a mandate to effectively fix the defense and to get this team into the playoffs as much as possible. It means that they've moved a little bit away from the mantra of playing the kids of the hardcore academy pathway. They're playing a little bit older guys and a little bit more stable guys, and it means they're able to grind out results. They play a much more defensively minded shape. They're much more interested in stifling the opposition and keeping the game close and tight, which is why they're able to grind out points on the road and not let things get away from them. So they're always in every game. And with the offense being a little out of sorts, except for Jesus Ferreira, when Jesus Ferreira scores, they win. He has 8 goals on the year. 5 of them are game winners. And he's the difference between them and mediocrity.
He's got 3 in the last 2 games. Sounds in some ways similar to the Houston Dynamo, although the Dynamo were a little bit more open against Minnesota United with some of the differing personnel they started. So back to that, I mean, it's obviously Velasco, O'Brien on the counterattack, and then your finisher, Ferreira.
Yeah, Velasco was hurt recently. He's back now. He's been back for a couple of games. People talk about FC Dallas as a pressing team. Well, they used to be a pressing team, and they do like occasionally to press, but they have a really low number of presses in the league. I think they were last time I looked. They play a mid to low block, and then it's less of an over-the-top sort of counterattack as much as it is rapid transition. They play the ball on the ground, and they move it back and forth and try to punch through the gaps and break lines and such, but it's not like a boot-it-and-chase kind of counterattack. It's a rapid transition. They want to take advantage of mistakes. They want to take advantage of recoveries and turnovers. But other than that, they're not really that concerned with having the ball.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, you want to hit the feet of Velasco and Obreon, and then you got a very savvy finisher in Ferreira. Ferreira, again, has three goals in the last two games. He's one of the hottest strikers. I want to go back to something you said. You used the word mandate. We're talking to Buzz Carrick, thirddegree.net. It's the numeral 3, rddegree.net, independent, longtime coverage of FC Dallas. You said the word mandate. Who put the mandate on Nico Estevez to become a more defensive team?
Dan and Clark Hunt. When they missed the playoffs in the last year under Lucci Gonzalez, and they fired Lucci late in that season with about 8 to 10 games left, everyone in the organization and both those owners talked about fix the defense, fix the defense, fix the defense. And he did. So when he came in, you know, all the press conferences, all his talking was about the coach says the defense needs to be better, and that they were right. They went from one of the worst defenses in the league to the second best defense in the history of this club last year. And that was the difference between missing the playoffs and becoming fourth in the West. They finished last time. So they've clamped down the goals, and they rarely allow multiple goal games. And so they keep everything tight, and it gives them a chance to get points when other teams can't get points. I mean, let's be clear. Like, this team is not in the same caliber as LAFC or Seattle. We jokingly call them the best of the rest because they just have, they don't have these incredibly high priced, super high profile DPs. They have the homegrown Jesus. They have the Paxton Pomykals. They have some mid kind of tier DPs like Paul Areola. They have a really, really young guy like Alan Velasco. They just can't punch at that same weight, but yet they're able to grind out results because of this defensive first mentality of not extending yourself and not getting exposed.
So it does come, though, at the cost of a playing style. I also look at the loss of Matt Hedges, and is this also maybe an attempt to protect the central part of your defense?
It is. Hedges was a cap casualty combined with age. You know, he was into his low 30s and, you know, starts to get injured and not be able to available as much as you wanted. But that's it. It's protecting the not so great center backs. They have a solid shot stopping keeper who's capable of standing on his head and keeping you in a game. Both of their sixes are relatively pedestrian and not necessarily game breaking players. So they end up with a low number of shots, but they're very efficient. They tend to get between four, you know, at their best, they're like a 40% shots on goal ratio. And Jesus scores on like half of the goals he gets on frame. So he has a really high finishing rate, but a low shot rate. So it's all about correct shot selection and getting into good positions when they do get forward with the ball, which they don't have quite often.
Buzz Carrick, thirddegree.net. They just won 1-0 at Austin FC on a dramatic Ferreira goal and 2-1 over Vancouver. By the way, that was a comeback victory after Martin Paz, the goalkeeper trying to play out of the back, made a mistake. So it's pretty clear. Dan and the Hunts are picking the lineup for this team.
I don't think they're quite doing that. They give him the leeway. Clark doesn't pay attention on a day-to-day basis. Dan is here all the time and actually runs the team, but I don't think that he would be involved at that level. But they were very clear that, like, this team will make the playoffs. That's the bare minimum of what we expect here. You know, so they did give him a pretty strong indication. But this coach is very, very conscious of running a very short roster. They only have about 25 active players here in town. And three or four of those are kids that are never in the rotation. So really he's running a 20-man roster. And so there's heavy man management using all five subs, heavy rotations from time to time with guys that can come in and out of the starting lineup. It's all about managing the longer season and the heat here and keeping this team in the conversation, even if they're not good enough to be one of the best.
Buzz Carrick, thirddegree.net on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law from DaspitLaw.com. Let's talk Jesus Ferreira. He just got a new form of motivation in the name of Falaron Balogun, who's committed to the U.S. men's national team. Before we get into his season right now and that he's one of the hottest strikers in MLS at the current moment based on the last two games, did anybody really ever ask him about the World Cup and maybe after being quite the go-to guy, not getting a lot of minutes? And what was his reaction?
Yeah, he's talked a little bit about it publicly. Even way before that, about a year ago, he had talked about having a counselor and talking to somebody about sports psychology and sports mentality because he was letting negative things get to him too much. And he worked really hard on playing in the moment, staying in the moment. And that really came to the head when he had, in his own admission, not that great of a World Cup, both in opportunity and when he actually got into the game. That certainly wasn't what he or his people expected to have happen. So he's really worked hard to keep a good mindset and to not get dragged down by those things. He knows that it's tough. He's become aware of all the negativity that he gets on social media from certain segments of the national team fandom, and he tries to block that thing out. So he's very dialed in on his father's legacy here and trying to do something his father never did here. And yet he knows he has a bigger future ahead of him. And so he tries not to listen to the noise, and he tries to stay in the moment. And I think you could, if you watched him this season coming out of that World Cup and into the beginning of the season, he definitely was in a little bit of a funk. He definitely was feeling it, but he's worked through it. And over the last month or so, he's really started to heat up and get back to the form he had last year, a lot of which is based around limited touches. When the ball comes to his feet, you want to see him with either a shot right off of the bounce or maybe one or two touches at most. It's quick trigger, rapid fire. When he tries to do too much and tries to compensate for everybody else is when he gets in trouble. So being in the moment and being present and being the playing in the system properly is when he excels at his best. And that's how he has gotten to where he is in this league.
Well, with that said, maybe this transitional type of game, very quickly getting up the field and getting the ball to him around the penalty area, which generally leads, you hope, to immediate chances off breaks. Maybe this suits him perfectly.
Yeah, it really does. The way that Dallas has transitioned to a rapid transition team and the way they try and get forward with acceleration is perfect for him, because his false nine movement creates a lot of stress and pulls center backs out of position. And then he or the wingers can attack those gaps. And he's really good at making the slightly delayed run into the box, getting into a free spot and finding these one or two shot opportunities to get it on goal and get tight and get good quality finishes.
So if the Dynamo put out an attack-oriented lineup, they're going to have the task of trying to break down FC Dallas. The Dynamo will return Hector Herrera to the starting lineup, most likely Amin Bassi as well. That may be against the Dynamo nature a little bit, having to break down a deep defending team.
Yeah, at home, Dallas will defend a little higher than on the road, but it is definitely a mid to low block most all the time. You know, they keep it, even when they're in possession, they keep a very rigid W shape with their back lines and wings and don't get extended. And then they can press back into two lines and of defense, you know, in that typical mid to low shape that you see all around the world. And they make it difficult for you to get through that. They have enough pace to handle you if you try and go over the top. They try and keep the spaces tight. They're not really worried about balls in from the outside wings because they have some relatively tall center backs. So they make it where you got to work really hard to break them down, and they don't really try very aggressively to get the ball back. They'll wait for you to make a mistake and then pounce. So it's, if you can't handle breaking down a block, it's going to be a long day. And this is true of any team. It's also true of Dallas. Dallas isn't real good at breaking down a block when teams come in here and play a block against them. They're not really good at long possession. It's difficult for anybody around the world to break down blocks. There's a reason why people play them. So you can expect to see that, I think. Even at home, you can expect to see Dallas play a block.
Talking to Buzz Carrick, ThirdDegree.net. Back to Jesus Ferreira. Jesus enjoys a little bit of twerking and a little bit of gamesmanship. You know, especially against the Dynamo, you know, the pound of the chest. We saw that recently again. Adds to the flavor, doesn't it?
Yeah, he does enjoy a little back and forth with the fan. I can remember that goal. Was it last year down in the right in front of the Dynamo supporters where there were some cups tossed back and forth? You know, he does feed off of the energy of the hate sometimes from the stands. He is an emotional guy, even though he tries not to be. And you can see in his body language when he plays too, he's a demonstrative player. And sometimes his teammates look at him sideways because he does carry himself in a negative way from time to time. But when it's on, he really does feed off of that energy and get motivated and moving. And it almost is a better tactic to try and diffuse him rather than antagonize him, because he is a guy that relishes that attitude.
I noticed it seems to me that Dallas attendance has improved in Frisco. What are the reasons in your mind for that, Buzz?
That began last year when they sold Ricardo Pepi for a big chunk of money. They, with the combination of that and the official announcement that the World Cup was coming, gave the Hunts a target of a certain amount of investment that they want to make and get their club to a certain place to try and play off of the big boost they're expecting from the World Cup for soccer here in the States. So starting last year, they hired a new VP of marketing. They didn't have one. They went out and got one, and they've increased their spending and they've increased their effort in every phase of the organization. It really has been amazing to watch here. Now, their hit rate is not 100%, of course, but to go from where they were to this willingness to spend and willingness to market, we're seeing it all around town here. It's created a boost in the standings, and they're now selling out almost every home game. They don't get the midweek games yet, but they get, you know, I think it's like six of or seven of eight games have now sold out here. Now, the stadium only holds 19,000 people, so it's not like they're bringing in 72 or anything. But from the days when they were averaging 10, 12, 13, to now be up averaging almost a sellout on the season is remarkable. And for the fan base here, it's really enjoyable. For those of us that have been here a long, long time, seeing these packed out stadiums, people having a good time, they've worked on the game atmosphere improvement, the quality of the event, not just on the field, but the whole thing inside the stadium, whether it be ancillary stuff for kids or game presentation. You know, it just has gotten better across the board. And the Hunts deserve a lot of credit for that, because they have upped their spending significantly now they've seen that they can make this kind of peppy money through this organization.
All right, real quick before we let you go, do you notice that mainstream media is covering FC Dallas a little bit more?
Not really, no. Unfortunately, that is about the same. You know, the big dog here is obviously the Cowboys, and there are multiple other sports that are really huge. I think that there is an awareness to a certain level for FC Dallas that's higher than it's ever been, but I definitely would not say that we're seeing mainstream coverage. I do feel that the World Cup is going to help, and we are seeing a slight tick up, and hopefully that will continue over the next couple of years.
Buzz Carrick, ThirdDegree.net. Buzz, thank you very much for coming on tonight. We appreciate it. Nice preview there of FC Dallas.
Oh, thank you, Glenn. Anytime.
All right, that's FC Dallas against the Houston Dynamo, Texas Derby this Saturday. Dynamo coming in at 4-5-2 after a loss 1-0 at Minnesota United. FC Dallas coming in after a 2-1 victory over Vancouver. By the way, that was a comeback victory. Best team in MLS in Texas right now is FC Dallas. And chasing them is the Houston Dynamo and Austin FC. We'll take a break here. Show is always brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, bringing soccer to the airwaves. We appreciate that. John getting married soon. Congratulations to John. And we appreciate the Daspit Law Firm for bringing soccer to the airwaves. We'll take a break. We come back. We got a lot more to go here.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. I do want to remind you, as always, we are presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Also, a quick shout-out here to LamontBrands.com. That's where you get your Soccer Matters T-shirts and hats. I remind you, all the proceeds go to pediatric cancer and the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation. And we've had some nice events for Snowdrop as of late. So get the T-shirt with a purpose. Talk about a guy with a purpose. Well, he's TV3 in Barcelona. He's a great friend of this show. By the way, celebrating his birthday, he is Jordi Sunyer. Many people have been asking for me to get him back on the show. So there's no better time, Jordi, when it's number one, your birthday, and number two, Barcelona are La Liga champions.
Hello, Glenn. Hello, everybody. You're looking gorgeous in your Soccer Matters T-shirt. So, everybody do the same and buy the T-shirt, because this is radio, I know, but Glenn's looking fantastic.
Well, Jordi Sunyer says you got to buy the T-shirt. That carries a lot more weight than Glenn Davis saying it. So there you go. I expect them to be flying off the shelves now. Well, Jordi, talk about the celebrations in Barcelona and what this first La Liga title, I think in 4 years, means to this club.
It means a lot. There was this parade last Monday all through Barcelona, through Barcelona city center. I would say 100,000 people more or less flocked to the streets to see the Barcelona players celebrating. And it was, of course, very special because the Barcelona fans needed to celebrate something. And as Xavi tried to insist on his last press conference before the game that gave them the title, it can't be the beginning of a new era. We have been saying that here in Barcelona for some time. We said that after Ronald Koeman won the Copa del Rey for his Barcelona, but now it seems it can't be the beginning of a new era because finally, as you know, Sergio Busquets is leaving. Let's see what's going to happen with Jordi Alba. Maybe this generational change is getting completed in Barcelona. So maybe we can talk about a change of era, a new dawning for the club. Yeah.
He's Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. All right. So this team did it very differently. But before we get to the way they did it, let's just talk about Xavi's work as a manager, because, you know, it's real easy to sit here and say, hey, we won a title, but we have to remember the financial problems, all these other pressures that were swirling around him. This is a pretty fantastic piece of management work, and he maybe did it a little bit different when it comes to playing style. I mean, at this moment, I think the team has only given up 13 goals.
Yeah, he deserves all the credit for sure because of the situation of the club. And because he was criticized because of this, of his playing style this season, I think Barcelona haven't still found the manager that continues the pure style or that evolves the pure, gorgeous style of football that Pep Guardiola brought to Barcelona. I think after Pep Guardiola and maybe Tito Villanova, the only manager who understood that this style had to evolve into, let's say, a more physical, a more prone to counter-attacking and gegenpressing game was Luis Enrique, the last manager to win the Champions League for Barcelona. And after that, after Luis Enrique, I think Barcelona have really struggled to find a manager that knows how the world of football was evolving and how Barcelona had to adapt to all these new systems or all these new ideas. Maybe Xavi Hernandez has done that because, as you were saying, many of his games were not extraordinary. Many 1-0 victories, defensive reliability, not a spectacular game. The first 45 minutes against Espanyol were fantastic, that's for sure. But he tried to find this balance between attacking football, the type of football that Barcelona fans like, and knowing he still hasn't got the best squad he would dream of. So he needed to reinforce the defensive performance. And he achieved this thanks to players, for example, like one of the key players this season, Ronald Araujo, that has been extraordinary. And in fact, many Barcelona fans are asking themselves right now, what could have happened if Ronald Araujo had been fit for those games against Inter Milan in the Champions League when Barcelona went out of the Champions League against Inter Milan, who are finalists of the competition? If Ronald Araujo had been fit, what could have happened? But we don't know. Anyway, credit to Xavi because it was a very difficult season and the greatest mark of all for them.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona, and it's always a treat when we get you on the show. Let's go back to Ronald Araujo. Uruguayan center back was a pillar, tremendous. Having been a former center back, I really enjoyed the way he played. He's only 24 years old. You know, just talk about, I think the thing I loved about him was his consistency. I think I love that about any footballer, but his consistency was pretty remarkable. Take us a little deeper into what he did this year, just as a center back and how maybe this emanated out and influenced the team overall.
He's a true leader, and that's very difficult for a 20-year-old guy coming from Uruguay, but Barcelona fans like these type of players. They love players that play this brand of Barcelona football, attacking football with flair, with technique, but also like these type of players that, as we say here, they get the t-shirts absolutely soaked wet because of the sweat, you know. And Araujo is one of them. And he's learned to love the club, to love Barcelona. He dyes his hair into blue and red colors, the Barcelona colors, to make everybody see he's one of them. He's one of the Barcelona fans also. And in terms of football, the man who brought Ronald Araujo to Barcelona some years ago was the former technical director Ramon Planas. Has worked in many clubs, Tottenham Hotspur, Espanyol, Getafe. Is great friends with Mauricio Pochettino, has worked alongside Mauricio Pochettino in many clubs. And he has a wide knowledge of Uruguayan market because fell in love with the country when he was an amateur footballer during a trip to Uruguay. He knew the football there, and the Uruguayan footballers are very competitive. And that's because they play competitively since a very young age. If you ever go to Uruguay, you can't watch what they call baby football. These are five-a-side or six-a-side games or seven-a-side played in sand pitches between neighborhood teams or school teams. And those kids, five-year-olds, six-year-olds, seven-year-olds, play like if they were playing for the Champions League. And they are just playing for their neighborhood's honor. And that's everyone that has seen these games say it's extraordinary to see how these young kids are taught how to compete from an early age. So this translates into all Uruguayan footballers. And Araujo, of course, is one of them. He's highly competitive, physically very strong. But I think this competitive spirit is the key for understanding how does he play. Why is he so important for this Barcelona, which is trying to rebuild the team? A leadership like the one that gives Ronald Araujo is fantastic for the team.
He's Jordi Sunyer, TV3. And you know, every World Cup or World Cup qualification in South America in CONMEBOL, you know, when Uruguay plays, everybody is reminded of that fighting spirit, which obviously Atletico Madrid over the years has taken quite a lot of advantage of. You know, will the playing style aesthetically, based on the fans, based on management, will it have to move a little bit more towards being, you know, maybe more of a higher pressuring team in the future based on, you know, that amazing history with Messi, Xavi, and Iniesta? I know that can't be recreated. I don't want to ever say the word can't, but, you know, that's a pretty hard bar to reach. You know, does the aesthetics, you think, change, or are people satisfied with the way it is now?
Now, first of all, it can't be repeated. You can say it can't be repeated because I think there will be no other Messi. There will be no other Xavi. There will be no other Iniesta. These are irreplaceable players. These are unique players. The motto here has been, since the Johan Cruyff years, it has been the Barca DNA. What does it mean, the Barca DNA? It means attacking football, circulation of the ball with high speed, playing a brand of football which is attractive to the fans, playing the more or less the total football way. Of course, it was a Johan Cruyff-inspired brand of football, so it comes from the Dutch total football of the 70s, the Ajax football of the 70s. So this is, let's say this is the foundation. From this foundation, which is the Barca DNA, you can't, I mean, if once you have the foundations, you can't build a house with, let's say, three windows, four windows, five windows, one bathroom, two bathrooms. It depends on your needs, or it depends on the budget you have for building the house, or it depends on many aspects. So, of course, Barcelona, as I was saying before, they need to play a game. First of all, a more physical game, because Barcelona fans, Barcelona analysts watch the Champions League semifinals, for example, and say, no, right now we cannot cope with this. We are not at that level. We can't equal the rhythm, the strength, the physical condition of teams like Manchester City, for example. They are much better than us in this aspect. So if Xavi can mix this Barca DNA with, of course, high pressure, but reliability in this physical aspect, this can bring us back the good Barcelona of more or less 10 years ago. He started to do this season because, as I was saying, this defensive reliability gives you a clue on how does Xavi want his team to play. It's difficult, but let's see if with the new players coming, Íñigo Martínez is already signed. It's a free transfer, veteran central defender from Athletic Bilbao. Let's see if somebody else comes. Of course, many people or many players will have to leave before letting other players enter the Barcelona squad. But I think it's his idea, and we'll have to see if he's able to bring this idea to reality.
Okay, that's part one with Jordi Sunyer of TV3, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. Look, few things are worse than suffering a severe injury or losing a family member in a serious accident. For many people, these types of experiences result in significant physical, emotional, financial setbacks. So that's why you need the best. The best is the Daspit Law Firm. Their personal injury attorneys will help victims and families overcome tough times. You can get a free initial consultation with the firm today. It's DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL-NOW. 713-CALL-NOW. By the way, I do remind you, they are bilingual. I do remind you that John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are bringing Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 to you. It's a high time to fight
when the walls are closing in. ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. John and his firm, they're personal injury attorneys. Nobody wants to get in any type of an accident or severe injury or have injury to family members. These types of experiences result in big, significant physical, emotional, financial setbacks. You got to get the best on your side. The best is simply the Daspit Law Firm. Their personal injury attorneys will help victims and families overcome these tough times. You can get a free initial consultation with the firm. You go to DaspitLaw.com, as I mentioned, or call them at 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. They are bilingual. And when you go to the Daspit Law Firm, you've come to the right firm. He's Jordi Sunyer, TV3, coming to us from Barcelona. This is tremendous stuff here. Xavi in press conferences. Take us into the press conferences with Xavi, how he's handled the media, and how you feel Xavi has, you know, handled that side of being a manager.
You know, there's high pressure here in press conferences because we have this latent tradition of a sporting press with more than 100 years of tradition, and especially in Italy and Spain, sporting press has a lot of power. And in the whole of Spain, we have many sports newspapers and many sports-dedicated websites. There are two newspapers following Barcelona, two newspapers following Real Madrid, and at the same time, being biased against Barcelona, as the Barcelona newspapers are biased against Real Madrid. Front pages last Thursday of the Barcelona sports newspapers were celebrating Real Madrid getting eliminated from the Champions League by Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. So I think Barcelona managers are accustomed to, if someone puts them a question on football, strictly on football, they give very good answers. Because normally, except maybe Ronald Koeman, but last Barcelona managers, Pep Guardiola, Ernesto Valverde, Xavi, of course, even Quique Setién, are managers that love to speak about football, even with journalists. So if the question is a good question about football, they are eager to answer.
Because don't they realize, Jordy, that this is a platform for them to talk about their team?
Of course, and it should be. But as I was saying, then come questions with no footballing intentions, questions asked with the goal of creating controversy, selling papers, selling radio hours, TV hours. And at the beginning of the season, Xavi was more, let's say, humorous with these kind of questions. He dribbled around these questions with that wit, with that bit of humor. But now at the end of the season, especially in moments in which Barcelona was near to clinch the title but hadn't clinched it yet, he was a little bit more aggressive with these type of questions, blaming this entourage, blaming some media for trying to create controversy around the team. It was a little bit harsher, but yeah. Generally speaking, these are quite friendly press conferences, the Xavi ones, and there's a tradition started with Pep Guardiola, because Pep Guardiola was a manager that you love to listen to, and Pep Guardiola's press conference were televised live on Catalan TV channels. We televised live Pep Guardiola's press conference, and from this moment, because everybody loved to listen to Pep Guardiola speaking, we continue doing this, and we keep on broadcasting live Xavi's press conferences, because you also like to listen to him, and gives good explanations, talks well about football. Of course, he can't say everything. He has to hide some things. But yeah, it's nice to hear such a big, enormous figure for world football like Xavi Hernandez talking about.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Jordy Sunyé joining us here, TV3 in Barcelona. Okay, I do have to ask this question about the potential of Messi coming back. Could he fit into this team? Everybody's going to say, hey, that's a silly question. But, you know, Messi coming back to Barcelona, how real do you think this is? And, you know, what's the sentiment in your city?
The thing is, bringing Messi back to Barcelona is not a... It's not a football signing. Let me put it like this. It's a business signing. Barcelona board think that bringing Lionel Messi back to Barcelona may bring money that the club desperately needs, still desperately needs. Can't bring sponsorship deals, friendly matches deals, Barcelona playing a friendly in Japan. After or once the league has finished during the month of June, they need money. They desperately need money. They will be touring the US. They will be in Texas in July. So touring the world with Lionel Messi is very different to touring the world without Lionel Messi. And selling Barcelona to Asian markets, the US, these kind of markets with Lionel Messi is very different. So in footballing terms, of course, he's not the Messi he used to be, even after winning the World Cup and being a key player for Argentina. Xavi Hernandez has always said that he sees now Messi as, and of course, an attacking midfielder, but playing deeper, like if you take the 4-3-3, in a number 8 position, more or less, number 8 or number 10, but... More deep, not that attacking midfielder, not that typical Argentinian number 10, not scoring so many goals, of course. Having said this, I think that the player is thinking one thing, the family, Messi's family, which are also his agent, his father is his agent, are thinking differently. He will have enormous, huge, massive, put it, whatever you want, offers from Saudi Arabia, lots of money. But the player thinks he still can't do it in a European league, in a good European league, like the Spanish one. He still can't do it in Barcelona, even if it is for only one season. So I think there's this kind of tug of war between the player and all his entourage. What's better for him?
How much, Jordy, does it play into? Because I hear this a lot in the States, that, oh, he loves the city of Barcelona, and he's going to go back to Barcelona because he loves living there. He's got his home and everything else and the lifestyle. How much does that play into it? I mean, it has to play a lot into it with a family.
I think it's very important for him. And I really think he didn't settle at all in Paris. He never settled in Paris because Messi has always called Barcelona his home. Kids were born here, went to school here, had their friends here. We have one of the good things we have here in Catalonia is a fantastic lifestyle. Weather is good, climate is good, food is good. You have the beach in Barcelona, you have the Costa Brava, you have the mountains, you can't ski, 2 hour drive from Barcelona. It's a fantastic place to live. Really, quality of life is fantastic. And he felt Barcelona is his home and will always be. He may be returning, for some spells in Argentina in the future, but he came to Barcelona when he was, 13 years old, and this has been his home ever since. So this is important for him. But of course, when you have offers of hundreds of millions of euros on the table for playing one season, two seasons in a league which is not so competitive as the Spanish one, he will come to Barcelona, of course, losing money because Barcelona can't pay him what he deserves. Barcelona are still in dire straits financially. But he will be playing for Barcelona again. He's a winner. Of course, he's a winner. And he thinks he can't play for Barcelona again and making Barcelona great again. I know this is a slogan that many of our listeners probably all like, but you understand what I want to say. He thinks he's still able to lead Barcelona into glory, into silverware. It's hard to tell what's going to happen because I really think there's this tug of war between, let's say, the heart and the brain. The heart would bring Messi to Barcelona. His brain and his father's brain overall would bring Messi to other places like Cristiano Ronaldo. But I hope in the next weeks we can find the end to this story.
Jordi, as always, we thank you so much for coming on, and we really appreciate all the insight from Barcelona, and keep doing all the great work you do for TV3. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
All right, that's a crazy good way to end the night here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5 in Houston, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. You can subscribe to the podcast of this show also after the fact. At Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you go. You can also get it on ESPN 97.5. Again, big shout out to Lamont Brands for our t-shirts and hats. LamontBrands.com, all the pediatric cancer, the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation. Big thank you to all our guests tonight, including the birthday boy, Jordi Sunyer. Until next Tuesday night, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember that soccer matters.
ESPN
97.5. Hi there, we are James and Dan Tufort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.